Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 38, and the Steelers are coming off a bad loss again on the road to the Baltimore Ravens. The Steelers go down 21-14, and their record falls to 4-4. The Ravens break a four-game losing streak, win their ninth out of 12 against the Steelers. They've had the Steelers number of late, Dave. This was a game that was, I think, you know, safe to say, one of the worst offensive performances we've ever seen through three quarters. And then whether you think it's garbage time or not, the Steelers were able to make it at least a little bit interesting in the fourth.
Yeah, interesting. Look, I mean, make no mistake about it. The final score on the scoreboard did not reflect what actually happened in this game. And for the first three quarters of this game, it was just a pitiful output by the offense. And with all that said, it was still what, a 13-0 game right at the start of the fourth quarter. Now, the Steelers' offense isn't the only unit to blame here, because the special teams unit had easily their worst game of the season. And, you know, even though the Steelers' defense played well throughout the game, limiting the Ravens on third downs for most of the game, you know, they probably could have played and should have played better. You know, you give up a 95-yard long touchdown to Mike Wallace on a quick slant. That probably shouldn't happen, and a few other explosive plays got away from him as well. So if ever was there a three-phase loss by the Steelers, this going to rank right on up there during the Tomlin era.
Yeah, although I will say, you know, in my book, the Steelers defense played much better than they played against the Eagles, which was a three-phase loss, much better than they played even against the Dolphins, which was a three-phase loss. So it certainly wasn't a perfect defensive effort, but hard for me to put the defensive quality of play anywhere near the ineptitude of the Steelers offense. And let's kick things off with two things, Dave. One, let's start with the injury report, as we generally do, and then I want to get to the choices between the actives and the inactives. The three guys on the injury report: Marquise Pouncey, Darius Heyward-Bey, and Jordan Dangerfield. I would imagine the most significant one of these is going to turn out to be Darius Heyward-Bey. With, you know, when you hear midfoot injury, you obviously think Liz Frank. With 8 weeks left in the regular season, we might have seen, and I know you guys wrote about this morning, the beginning and the end of Darius Heyward-Bey as a starting receiver.
Yeah, that didn't last long, did it? It got elevated on top of Marcus Wheaton, who was inactive for the game. And, that foot injury, when he went down, it's hard to tell when you actually see the replay with the camera angles that they have what exactly happened to, I believe it was the right foot. I thought initially that he broke his ankle the way he had come down and was holding it. But as Mike Tomlin said after the game, is a midfoot injury. And as I wrote in my post, anytime you hear such a thing, you think that the Liz Frank type of injury there. And I saw a video from a fan that was at the game, and I think a Ravens fan at that, obviously on two crutches with that foot in a boot. And I would be absolutely shocked if we see Darius Heyward-Bey over the course of the next 2 weeks. And he might very well, depending on how, you know, whether or not this is a Liz Frank injury, this might be it for him for the season. And Marquise Pouncey left after the second offensive play of the game with what turned out to be a dislocated thumb, according to TV reports.
Different reports, because I think Tomlin called it a finger. Other people used the word finger. I think Bert said thumb. I'm going to guess Bert got it right, but there were some different reports on that.
Yeah, regardless, it supposedly was on his snapping hand, and while he did return to the game, he didn't last, you know, very long after that, and ultimately had to be relieved permanently by B.J. Finney. And the other one, Jordan Dangerfield with a groin. We saw Shamarco Thomas just suffer a groin injury a few weeks back, and he missed a couple of games. So we'll wait to find out the severity of that. But Jordan Dangerfield, obviously more of a special teams contributor than he is anything else. So those are the three that we know right now, and who knows what will pop up during the week, because, you know, this past week everything looked to be, you know, going the Steelers' way somewhat on the injury report, or kind of as expected on the injury report. And then we had William Gay show up on Friday as questionable with a foot injury. Gay obviously ended up playing in this game, kept that 152 game streak alive. But even he, you know, with Artie Burns starting in this game against the Ravens, Gay was had his snaps cut in half. So we'll just have to watch what happens from here. Ben, for the most part, you know, say what you will, he moved around pretty good in the pocket, I thought. And I don't think you can blame anything that happened Sunday against the Ravens on his knee. I think it was more...
I spent the whole second half of the game on Twitter, you know, fighting that fight, saying, you know, if you didn't think so early... if you watch the fourth quarter and you think Ben's knee was somehow an inhibitor in terms of his performance, you didn't watch the same game I watched. I mean, he went, moved to his left and threw, you know, threw 40 yards into the end zone. He dove and ran and dove into the end zone for a touchdown. He had a guy sack him where he was able to brace himself on both legs, have the guy on his back and throw him off, and then get tackled by getting grabbed by the left ankle and go down and get up without a problem. Basically, I more or less completely dismiss Ben's knee injury as being a factor. He did as well, by the way, in the post game, said it wasn't rust, wasn't an injury in terms of his performance.
And I reserve judgment until the All 22 comes out, so I can watch a little bit closer how he steps in or doesn't step into a throw, maybe being a little cautious that way. But I mean, from a mobility, from a sheer mobility standpoint, I mean, early on in the game, he rolled out to his right side outside the pocket. I mean, it looked
first play of the game.
You know, he looked fine. If I didn't know any better, and I watched that game, and you told me afterwards that he had a meniscus procedure done 20 days ago, I probably wouldn't have believed you. So, you know, look, I mean, he had other problems, but, you know, I don't view a lot of them. I think it was more rust than anything. If anybody did not read anything into, you know, we wrote early on in the week, reemphasized Roethlisberger not only playing poorly in Baltimore throughout his career, but playing poorly in his first games back from injury. If you doubted that, any of those stats heading into Sunday, you should pay attention to them going forward, because
I think we can throw up top there. Well, you know, an even bigger stat is now Ben's performance on the road. Period. I mean, you know, as simple as that. I mean, it's just been god awful. I mean, there's no, you know, no two ways to talk about it. It has been terrible. But before we get into the game and get into exactly what happened there, I think there's some interesting things on the depth chart and the inactives that I want to just touch on. And one is, you know, we knew going into the week that Artie Burns was going to be the starting, you know, corner. And it was interesting because we saw these guys flip sides. You know, I couldn't ascertain exactly what the scheme was for where they wanted Cockrell and Artie to line up. But I'll say this, you know, he didn't play a perfect game, but he played a pretty good game. And I think Artie Burns is now your starting corner. I would be shocked if we see them flip back to the way it was before with Gay the starter outside and Burns as more, you know, coming in nickel situations. I think Artie Burns is not permanently your starting corner.
Well, being a first-round draft pick, you know they're itching to get him into the lineup, right? I mean, you don't want guys like that only playing 20 to 30 snaps when you think that they're your future. Artie's performance Sunday was uneven at best, I thought. Sure, he had a few nice plays in there. He had a nice physical play where he came up and separated a running back, I believe a running back from the football, Terrence West, I believe, on one of those plays. That's good. That's a William Gay like play. Those are the type plays that you know you want a Steelers cornerback to make. He had a nice read and said after the game that they saw some things on the film on that interception. But with that said, Joe Flacco threw the ball right to him on top of that. So, you know, I don't want to backhand compliment the guy for getting an interception, something we've been clamoring for. And look, sometimes we see teams around the league, and I have envy sometimes. Why don't opposing quarterbacks just throw the football to the Steelers' defensive backs like we see in some of these other games? Well, that happened, and part of getting an interception is catching the football, and the Steelers have had problems doing that at times. The few times that has happened this year, so don't want to knock him there. The slant to Mike Wallace, a little bit late, you know, coming out of the break there. He's got to make that tackle when you got it. You know, only got a single.
I mean, I'll say on the slant, you got beat on an 8-yard completion. I mean, that stuff happens. I mean, he didn't give up a 95-yard touchdown. He gave up a 7-yard slant, and then Mike Mitchell didn't make the play. I mean, yes, it would have been nice if Artie made the tackle for sure. But I'm not putting the 95-yard touchdown on him. I'm putting getting beat on an 8-yard slant.
Sure, and Mike Mitchell does have to make that tackle along with the one on Steve Smith in the game as well, too. Poor angles on both those. Got the old stiff arm to the face. And, you know, for a guy that does a lot of talking prior to the game, you know, about the battle with Steve Smith, Mike Mitchell didn't hold up his end of that battle. But back to
stay on this, Dave. Do you think he'll stay the starter?
Oh yeah, I think he will. He did get abused quite a bit and picked on in the second half there. Maybe a questionable pass interference call included in there as well too. I mean, he's your future. You got to get him playing time, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, I would keep him there. I'd keep him the starter. So, I mean, to me, this is pretty. This is not really even this isn't a tough decision. I'd leave him in there.
And you know, William Gay is not your future. And you know, I mean, look, I think you got to start getting him more snaps and making him a starter on the outside. The more snaps he gets, hopefully the better he'll get. So you know, you're not just going to get better standing on the sideline. So
yeah, to me, I guess we have a slightly different read of this, and it'd be interesting to see if we have continue to have a different read on Wednesday. I thought he was pretty good, so you know, I think it's the best game we've seen him play. Yeah, the interception, any defensive back should make that play. It wasn't a particularly, you know, he didn't do anything technique wise but you know, whatever, he made it. So okay.
Well, you got to remember he was beat down that right side on another one too, on a poor throw by Flacco. So yeah, look, we'll see what you know. Obviously, you can't see the cornerbacks on every play in the TV feed. So when the All 22 comes out, we'll get a little better look at Artie Burns. You know, like I said, we saw some things that he hasn't really done so far, and that's things like coming up and separating, you know, making good hits on short passes up underneath there and screens to the running back. He did some good things in this game. It just wasn't I don't think it's as good of a game as people are going to try to make it out to be, though. So
okay, well, I'm probably one of those people, so we will see what we see when we get to it next time. Okay, let me ask you the next one. Obviously a bit surprised with Marcus Wheaton practicing all week that he's not out there. And Dave, when we get back to this, and again, I just want to kind of breeze through these things and we'll come back to the whole, you know, game review. Look, I'm not at practice all week, but by all accounts, Marcus Wheaton is healthy. The Steelers haven't had a second receiver step up now for, you know, a month. You know, Sammy didn't have any catches yesterday. He didn't have any, you know, catches in the New England game. Obviously, there's some injury issues. Eli Rogers was a non-factor. Obviously, didn't even play in New England, was a non-factor in the game plan of this game until the game was almost basically over at 21-0. You know, Kobe Hamilton can't work in the middle of the field. DHB ends up getting hurt. And for whatever people want to love on DHB, and I think Dave and I like DHB as, you know, a special teams player and a guy, you know, who knows what he's supposed to do and can be, you know, a receiver. I don't think Dave and I think probably, well, I'll speak for myself, I certainly don't think he should be a starting receiver. He has 5 catches on the year. I mean, you know, well, Marcus Wheaton, he has been a massive disappointment this year, no doubt about it. But I don't understand not dressing him in this type of situation. 3 years of experience with Ben, 3.5 years of experience with Ben. you know, more than any of the other guys. And, you know, a guy who has occasionally shown flashes of being really good against Seattle last year is the obvious, you know, career game that he had. So, Dave, I was surprised that Kobe Hamilton got the nod over Marcus Wheaton. You?
Look, I mean, you've got how many one-trick ponies are on this team right now?
Yeah, four.
I mean, seriously, DHB. I like DHB as much as, you know, probably more than most Steeler fans, because of the fact that he can still stretch the field and he gives you something on special teams. But it ends there. I mean, playing.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, okay, he can run block a little bit, but that's it. I mean, you know.
I mean, that's it. That's been him. And look, you got to turn your head a little bit to the side, too, on some of the passes that just clank off of his hands. I mean, you got to take you got to weigh his good with his bad, and that's why you get a guy making what he's making and probably shouldn't be a starting wide receiver. And then let's look at Sammy Coates. I mean – you go back to his college days at Auburn, the big thing on Sammy Coates was that he was a stretch the field kind of player. You go back and you look at his touchdowns during college, as I did after he was drafted, most of them are the 30-yard variety. Not much of an underneath guy at all, and questionable hands at times. What has he done with the Steelers so far? He's primarily been a, hey, Sammy, go deep. And that's where he's, you know, outside of that and some wide receiver bubble screens, right? What else has he done in the intermediate range? Sure, he had a catch or two against the Jets, but that's not his game. Will he improve? Will he become a more well-rounded receiver moving forward? I kind of have my doubts, David, and you know, I he looks like a go deep kind of one trick pony receiver along with DHB right now. And then Kobe Hamilton, really, what do we know about Kobe Hamilton to this point as well too? He had a nice kind of comeback there in the game a few weeks ago in the loss. I thought who was it? The Jets or the Miami
game. He caught the touchdown.
Yeah, or Miami. He's another one that can get up over the top. But you know what else? What else does he give you outside of that?
Right. None of these guys can work the middle of the field. And that gets exactly to the point. You're not even dressing Wheaton, and you're not looking at Rodgers, and you didn't use him in the New England game. And you know, I think this is a massive problem and a massive. Okay, we'll get back to the two other dress not dress questions were Shamarco Thomas over Rosie Nix. Any thought? I mean, you know, not all that significant to special teams guys mostly, but you know, with the ineffectiveness in the run game. You wonder if Rosie Nix might have been helpful there. So I thought that was a little curious. And then the last one, Dave, and I posted all these before the game. This is not post-game type stuff. Al Shabazz over Justin Gilbert. Again, not a particularly significant impact on the game. But again, when you're looking at the depth chart, all of a sudden these are you think of these guys as very maybe the same type of player. And the fact that Shabazz got the helmet over Gilbert, you know, might be worth making note of.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to call when they promoted Shabazz. I thought, well, okay, they only have four corners at the time on the roster, and one of them's banged up in William Gay. You know, makes a lot of sense. I even at that time, I thought Gay was going to play. I never really thought that Gay wasn't going to play. I mean, the guy has never missed a game during the season. That foot injury would have had been pretty bad, I think, for him to be held out of that game. So when Shabazz was promoted, I thought, okay, well, you know, they need some special teams help. Cody Wallace hasn't done anything. Why not use a roster spot and dress an extra corner and have five of them going into this game? I think the decision, this is just me speculating, of course, I think the decision to not dress Gilbert was related to the fact that A, they didn't envision having to play a lot of multi cornerback sub packages in this game because of for starters, and for B, with a kicker like Justin Tucker,
no kick return.
Right, how many kick returns? So I swaddled that one a lot easier. Could they have used a guy like Roosevelt Nix in that backfield as a lead blocker for 10 plays over a guy that then maybe David Johnson? Probably. Would it change? Would it change the outcome of the game, or increase the running game output? I don't know. If Ben Roethlisberger kept deciding to run into eight man fronts, probably not. But Marcus Wheaton, I think, probably was the biggest surprise there. And say what you will about Marcus Wheaton, and I don't have any posters of him up on my wall currently. At least he's a guy that's caught a few passes in the middle of the field in the past.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Hey, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation, or refinance, we got our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage looking to help you out. He's a lifelong Steeler fan and a Pittsburgh native, nationally recognized lender. He'd love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or you can email him at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Nothing easier than that. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
You read that much better than I did last week.
fair enough. So the next thing here is, let's just address the Mike Tomlin situation and the coaching situation and what you thought. Well, again, we're going to have a lot of time this week is going to be spent talking about losing to a sub 500 team. And again, are the Dolphins a sub 500 team today? Were they a sub 500 team when the Steelers played them? Of course they were by their record. Will they be at the end of the season? We'll see. We'll see, where the Eagles are, where all these teams are at the end of the year. But this is a game where, the Steelers were a small favorite, according to Vegas, as they have been in every game but the New England game. They come out, Dave, off a bye, and it's a disaster offensively. I mean, there's no other way to talk about it. It's a disaster. Charlie in the postgame wanted to put a lot of it on Maurkice Pouncey. I want to put a lot less of it on Maurkice Pouncey. I could not believe Mike's postgame comments in we didn't want to be one-dimensional when you go, in the first half, I think 6 of 7 drives, you go 3 and out, and you have 2 first down, 1 by penalty. The whole thing I thought was terrible. Is there anything to think about with Mike Tomlin in terms of his future with the Steelers yet?
I don't think Mike Tomlin should be fired today, for starters. I'll tell you that. But there's obviously some concern about having teams prepared to play against teams that you would, look, even though Roethlisberger hasn't been great in Baltimore during his career, even though he hasn't been great in first games back from his career, this was a very winnable game, and one that when you continue to shoot yourself in the foot with the penalties that they had. Now, were there a few questionable penalties in this game? Sure, but we could go game by game and probably circle 5 penalties and say that was these are questionable, and then these didn't get called on the other team. So I'm not, penalties are penalties. You have to overcome these, but it's the penalties, the unforced error penalties, like the false starts, the stupid kind of penalties, the kind of, the 12 men on the field when the opposing kicker's about,
oh my gosh,
about to attempt. Look, Justin Tucker probably makes that 54-yard kick anyway, but why don't you?
But that is the nut right there. 49-54. You want to talk about one spot in the field where you might ask for 5 yards? It's right there.
You know what? You should have just took everybody off the field at that point and saved a play risking injury when you gave him those 5 yards right there. You should have said, it's an intentional walk there, right? I mean, just take your guys off the field and say, we don't want to get injured here. Go ahead and kick it, because that's essentially what happened there. Those kind of penalties, the delay games. Everybody saw the penalties. In this one, the missed snap counts. On that free run on by Terrell Suggs. Go back and watch that frame for frame.
That's on Cody, right? Is it on Cody or is it on Al? Like, did Cody snap it on two?
You mean B? You mean B? You mean BJ, right?
BJ, sorry.
Right. either BJ had the snap wrong or Al did, because Al is sitting there.
He never moved. But the reason I'm thinking of, you know, Charlie thought it was BJ got it wrong, but I will tell you, Jesse James didn't get it wrong. I mean, he got off the ball.
Yeah, and several other offensive linemen moved at the snap of the football, maybe because they're closest to it and looking down at it. But me thinks Al got that one wrong.
Somebody got it wrong anyway.
Of all people, you don't want free running after your quarterback. It's Terrell Suggs, and little things like that. And like I said, you know, the thing, say you know, look, I understand people are disappointed with the game plan. I understand a lot of people wanting Todd Haley fired today. But make no mistake that there were times where I thought Ben Roethlisberger should have probably checked out of a play, and everybody knows he has that ability. You don't, and when you call a play, 7 times out of 10, that play has multiple receiving options and reads for a quarterback. It's not just drop back and throw it deep down the right or left side. Sometimes Ben will go into the play with that's going to be his option based on what he sees. But and look, I'm not going to defend Roethlisberger's play at all, but how many drops did we see in this game? 4 or 5? I know Jesse had one. I know Bell had one. I know AB had one. I know Sammy had one. Who else?
Yeah, I mean, I can envision the four you just mentioned. I mean, there's probably one or two more, but yeah, fair point. I mean, Ben was awful, but yeah, that's a fair point.
And how many throws were throws were behind receivers where it looked like Ben wasn't on the same page? He had the one that he threw into the dirt.
Oh man, I mean, good gracious, and yeah, okay, this is going to get to my bigger question, which I want to ask you in 1 second. Let's just so on Tomlin. So just to circle back to my initial question to you, Tomlin's not getting fired today. Tomlin's not getting fired at the end of the year, right?
No, I don't think so. No.
Does Mike Tomlin have something to answer to about his team's preparation, particularly on the road?
Yeah, absolutely. It all goes back to the head coach. Now, look, do I think that some coaches on this team probably need looking at? Yes, I do. You know, say what you will about Danny Smith. That unit really cost the Steelers just as much as the offense did on Sunday. You know, is the defense scheme related? Is it personnel related? They did do a better job of getting pressure on the opposing court.
Yeah, I mean, and it just makes you wonder that everybody like you and me is going, you know, for 7 weeks you don't blitz, and you know, you have 8 sacks and you blitz like crazy this game, and you get 3 sacks and you get a bunch of pressures. And the only other time they blitzed a lot, the same result.
Now, did I need to look at Joey Porter? Maybe. Do they need to look at Carnell Lake? I don't know. Maybe. John Mitchell, bless his heart, I love him. Does he have these guys working so, you know, working so hard on technique and reading things that it's causing them to be robotic in areas and overthinking things? You know, I don't know. You know, the Steelers have talent on that defensive line. Now, when you get out to the edge, it's a different story. When you have guys like Anthony Ciccolo and James Harrison playing the bulk of your snaps in a Week 9 game, you know, that's
it just says a lot. Without injuries being the determining factor.
That's scary. You know, and look, James Harrison has had a great career, and he is still the Steelers' best pass rusher at 38, 39 years old. And it's not even close. You know, second's not even close. I mean, this is a – I mean, how – you know, look, I'll throw this out there. And I like Kevin Colbert as well, too. I mean, this team has a personnel talent problem right now. Would you still have drafted
at that position?
Well, I think it you know, look, I mean, I think Hayward and Tuitt were good picks, and the jury's still long out by Shazier, who, by the way, as we've said several times, when Shazier's on the field, I'd like to drop an F-bomb here, but I won't, but fantastic, you know? when he's healthy. He's got to stay healthy. The back end, I mean, right now.
I mean, big transition in the back end. Obviously, you know, Golson and Dupree aren't, you know, we've got nothing out of last year's draft. We'll see where that goes. But, you know, Sean Davis started to play, and I think we'll see more. I think eventually we'll see Sean Davis here replace Robert Golden.
He ate into his snaps yesterday.
I think that's coming this week.
And I didn't understand that, to be honest with you. I mean, I wrote earlier in the week, David, that the Steelers' run defense, for several reasons, should be better against the Ravens. For starters, the Ravens' rushing attack pretty much sucks. First time really that in several weeks that we saw Hayward, Shazier, and Robert Golden all back on the field together. Okay, if you think about it, that only happened a little over 100 snaps heading into the game against the Ravens. They were obviously better against the run. But, you know, it's kind of like Artie Burns. They drafted Sean Davis in the second round. You bet AR2 is telling them, guys, you got to get these draft picks on the field. And I think you saw that happen in the game against the Ravens. And you know, like you said, we're probably going to see Robert Golden not play a full complement of snaps every game moving forward.
Yep, absolutely. So, okay, so that, you know, because I think everybody knows where, you know, we're not going to knee-jerk react on the coaching staff. Again, these are two different questions here. Nobody's absolving the coaching staff of any blame. Nobody's also firing the coaching staff this morning. There's another half of this season to go, and just to put a little bit of perspective on it, the Steelers in week 9 last year, whenever the bye week was, I don't know, but after their eighth game last year, Ben was returning from injury. He had missed 3.5 games, getting hurt in that Rams game in St. Louis. He comes back, he throws 3 interceptions against the Bengals. The Steelers lose 16-10 at home, and they're 4-4. Okay, so we know how the rest of the season went, and I'm sure if we went back and listened to that podcast, some of the very same issues would be the topics of conversation. And obviously, primarily that time, I'm sure it was Ben's play. So let's get to Ben's play now, Dave. And I went to our old staple. When the times that we got to see video replays of plays from the overhead camera, it was, you know, and you touched on some of this a little earlier here in the show. Ben was awful. I mean, some of the throws he made were so bad. But, you know, as I briefly mentioned to you last night, I would love to know how many throws until the fourth quarter Ben made between the numbers that went, you know, more than 3 or 4 yards down the field. The interception, he was looking for Jesse James on a straight curl, kind of a stop route. Ben looked like he was going to do one of three things. He was going to throw to AB on the outside. He was going to check down to Le'Veon Bell, or he was going to, you know, maybe throw to Jesse James either in the very short middle or in the flat. And nothing else. He was not looking for any of these things. And it goes back to who you played and who you dressed. Sammy Coates can't run the middle of the field. Kobe Hamilton can't run in the middle of the field. Darius Hayward basically can't run in the middle of the field. So you've got Eli Rogers. He's the only guy dressed. And Ben didn't look for him at all. And there were so many plays that we got to see in the first three quarters where if he looks the other way, Eli Rogers is open. And I'll come back to this, Dave. Ben wants his guys college open. And I think you were the first guy to use that phrase, you know, 6 years ago when we were doing this podcast. And I think the game we saw yesterday was Ben just doesn't play well against zone defenses. I don't know why everybody in the world doesn't play zone against the Steelers. You know, roll safety and follow Antonio Brown. Leave your linebackers in having deep drops but very focused on Le'Veon Bell and let anybody else beat you, because if you play in zone coverage, and we now saw, you know, the last game he played against Miami, he threw 2 interceptions, bad interceptions into zones. He had 2 balls that absolutely should have been picked. One, I think, was by Webb. The other by C.J. Mosley. Okay, he gets the benefit. They weren't picked. A tipped pass gets picked. But, you pointed it out. He was so off target on some of his throws. It was ridiculous. And he was just, until the fourth quarter, when we saw a different thing happening, it was just as bad a performance as you could have.
Well, about the middle of the field or between the numbers throws, look, he had – most of them took place in the fourth quarter. I've got zeros and ones here along with the player's number. I had to do this in a rush after you wanted me to look at it, David, and I didn't calculate distance down the field in that, because I had to watch the game twice, you know, on top of it. But I will tell you that I mean, heck, you know, he only attempted, what, 19 passes in the first half? How many total passes did he attempt in the first half? Because I think you were more concerned about a split after the fourth quarter, right?
I think until the fourth quarter, we saw nothing. And then, you know, in the fourth quarter, we started to see him go that direction.
Yeah, he only attempted 14 passes because that's where I had the line break here. 14 passes in the first half. Okay, and I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of those between the numbers. Now, a lot of those between the numbers in the first half were short passes. I don't have the distances on those yet. Very few of those were kind of down the middle seam type throws. Now, you know, in the second half and on, and especially in the fourth quarter, you know, only 1, 2, 3, 4 throws, I think. 4 or 5 throws, not inside the numbers. Now, the theory behind that, you know, you could easily point to, well, the Ravens had a 21-0 lead. They're going to play a little bit softer. Their main objective is not to give up a chunk touchdown, which they did.
Right.
Which they
right.
On a ball that Ben kind of bent uncharacteristically doesn't try to force that one. Like he did to AB, but it was a good throw. It was a good catch. It was a touchdown. Okay.
Yep.
You know, he, and I think you'll see Alex posted this morning, you know, a couple screenshots and video or GIFs as well too of Ben missing on some throws, on some plays that they run quite a bit or have run quite a bit so far this season. So, you know, I don't know how many snaps Ben took.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Ben struggles against zone defenses?
I think Ben struggles to throw to anybody that's not wide open.
Okay. I agree. You know, when we talk about Ben being a lead quarterback, you know, when you have Ben's played 7 games this year. He's had 3, maybe 4, awful games this year. I mean, you can't be an elite quarterback when you're playing well half the time. I mean, look, he was awful yesterday. He was awful against Miami. He was awful against the Eagles. And you can debate whether he was awful or not against the Bengals. Now, what's the common denominator in the games that he was really good? Washington, you know, pretty good. Kansas City, really good. Playing man defense.
Here's the thing. I think Ben excels at real rhythmic type stuff, okay, stuff that – you know, RPO kind of stuff where the ball comes out quick on a slant or something like that. Checkdowns normally, although he missed, he lofted one over Le'Veon Bell yesterday. The deep ball down the sides obviously is part of his strong game, especially when
he missed Sammy bad on one of those.
Yeah, he missed. But on the flip side, he hit Sammy in stride in the end zone on one that Sammy's got to come up with that catch.
Tough catch to get your feet down, but you know, you've got to catch.
Yeah, you got to catch the football. And you know, I Ben obviously does good in situations where it becomes backyard ball, where you know, you hold on to the football 3.5-4 seconds, and you wait for guys to work themselves open to run away from people. And it's not a knock on him. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Roethlisberger is who he is, and we'll continue to say that's just Ben being Ben. You know, that's a Ben Roethlisberger play. He makes plays that nobody else in the league or very few other quarterbacks in the league make. Sometimes I still question his IQ at times with what he sees. At times, I think certain games he might prepare better for than others, you know, as well. I don't know how many snaps Ben took with a first team offense last week. I don't know.
Let's assume it was half, because that's kind of what I was told.
Well, it didn't look like it.
I agree, and it's but I mean, how many you know? Look, this is a pet peeve of mine, and it was since before the New England game.
I'm gonna get a lot of hate mail. People wanting to think I want to trade Ben and cut Ben. That's not the case. It's just
no, definitely cut him. Let's cut him this morning. We're gonna get Zach in there. Look, we're on the same page here for sure, because I'm not giving Ben a pass on this stuff, and it's now been enough of the season where, you know, you have to question his level of play. I mean, he has a big game and everybody wants to put him in the MVP conversation. Well, he's had more bad games than good games, and that, you know, you're not in the MVP conversation. You're not getting in the MVP conversation. The thing that just blows my mind, and I'm glad it ended the way it ended, because it kind of made me feel like, you know, I have some justification for feeling the way I'm feeling, is how about when they ran, I don't know if they ran trips right, tight bunch or what, but they ran the drag, the cross to the shallow cross to Eli Rogers, and he gains like 7 yards. And it just, you know, I'm sitting here having this, you know, again, trying to watch the game and make sure that's my first focus. But in these Twitter conversations saying, you know, it's not Ben's health. He needs to look at the middle of the field. He needs to use Eli Rogers. And he runs that play, and I'm just like, that's basically there all day, every day against most teams. Why are they not running this play? You have Wheaton to run it. You have Rogers to run it, and you're not running it. You're running these, you know, flats to Jesse James. You're running God knows what else you're running. But you're not. This is a play that will open up so many other things. And then, you know, we saw Eli Rogers make some really good catches. I mean, there was one just off his fingertips that Weddle should have intercepted as well. But, I mean, he made some really good catches and was able to get open. It just blows my mind that, you know, I think Ben was locked in. And again, it comes back to trust. Do you trust your receivers? And, you know, maybe it's not there. But that just goes further to the question of, you know, should Marcus Wheaton be playing? Because this 30-point offense, and by the way, just for anybody listening who's, you know, you've heard us use this term, let's be very clear where this came from. This came from Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger. This is nobody in the media saying, you know, they should score 30 points a game. This came right out of, you know, the South Side. From, you know, Mike's used it, Todd's used it, Ben's used it. 30-point offense, I mean, there's 13 minutes left and they have 0 points.
Yeah. And look, back to the wide receiver thing, and I think AB alluded to this after the game. Somebody else got to step up and take this pressure off me. And until somebody does that, until you have a true number two bona fide wide receiver that's a threat, then AB's going to continue to see that bracket and sometimes three-man coverage to take him away to dare. I mean, really – does this team right now have a legitimate number two wide receiver?
Well, so here's my answer. The short answer to your question, to answer it, because we probably don't answer questions well enough, but short answer is no. But if they used Eli Rogers or Marcus Wheaton the right way out of the slot in the middle of the field and use Sammy Coates as, you know, your deep threat who can run some intermediate routes, they can absolutely get by. And Ladarius Green is not going to, you know, answer all these questions, but maybe Ladarius Green, maybe, you know, they're going to throw him into the fire this week because of that answer and say, you know what, maybe not on week 9 or week 10 or week 11 is he going to be the immediate, you know, other guy, but maybe by, you know, week 16, if you can get yourself into the playoffs, he can be a big part of the offense. So it's, you know, just throw him into the fire and get him used to it so that, you know, if you get that far, he can be a difference maker. But the answer is no, but they do have the talent to do things to answer this question, yes.
David, did I lose you there?
You got me.
Okay, all right, sorry. And hopefully this recording didn't drop out there. It looks like it's still recording, but my earphones just kind of messed up on me there.
So my short answer, Dave, was the answer is no, they don't have a number two, but if they use the right guys the right way, meaning Rogers and Wheaton, and then Coates on the outside is a guy who can, you know, stretch the field, run some intermediate routes. They have the personnel to make it be yes. And, you know, Ladarius Green, maybe they have to throw him into the fire, not because he's going to be a difference maker this week, but if you get him in there and get him his reps over these next 2 or 3 weeks, and the Steelers can, you know, play well down the stretch and get to the playoffs, maybe he can be a difference maker, you know, late in the season.
Well, here's the thing, too, and I was thinking about this last night while watching that tape. If you're going to beat cover two, how are you going to beat cover two? Down the middle of the field in the seam, right? You get those safeties widened a little bit look at what Jarvis Landry did a few weeks ago and how they ran that switch release, you know.
Yeah, yeah. The two, you know, you run two verts against the, you know, against the corner on that side and make the safety
right,
connect.
Right. You get one of those safeties to stretch wide. You send a deep guy down the other side to keep the other safety away from the middle of the field. And you need somebody who can expose the middle of the field. Look, we see teams do this against the Steelers, right? against cover two and cover three, for that matter. You know, just you're working kind of in a smaller window per se, but. The thing is when you get a guy like Ladarius Green, you know, that's the type of guy that you would hope would be able to exploit, you know, those areas of the field. And you go back to Eli Rogers being inactive for the game against the Patriots. I understand why Mike did it, if all these reports are true about Eli being late for a walkthrough and not the first time that he's been late. But on you know, don't you have some sort of fine system or public team humiliation thing? You know, make the guy walk around with a dunce hat on or something all week, or with a sign that says "I can't be on time for walkthroughs," and let the media see that and write about it. Right? You know, you're stunning the guy's growth by benching him. And not that some players don't deserve to be benched, that's not what I'm saying here, but when, look, make no mistake about it, the way things played out in that game against the Patriots, the Steelers sure could have used Eli Rogers on the field for that game, right? I mean, you end up running a lot of two and three tight end sets without him. You don't have the personnel to do that you know, as part of a passing offense or to
the formations offensively were crap. The fact that they're bringing Chris Hubbard in there as an extra tight end, a tackle eligible, that's crap. That was, you know, I don't mind
seeing that on third and one situations.
Yeah, exactly. You know, first and ten. It's a, you know, it's a joke what they were doing offensively in that first half.
I like two tight ends. I'm a huge fan of 12 personnel if you got the personnel to run it. You know, the Steelers don't right now. When Ladarius Green gets on the field, along with Jesse James, you know, maybe they can do something with that. But, I mean, look, Xavier Grimble, what a huge disappointment that guy's been based on all the hype. He's not long for this roster right now. Jesse James is just a guy, you know, like it or not, he's just a guy.
He's absolutely just a guy. And people, you know, yes, he's not a good blocker, and he's not a dangerous receiver. He's a guy catching the ball. He's a threat in the red zone. But, you know, I don't know that Jesse James' ceiling is any higher than we're seeing
David
right now.
Johnson is a second string fullback playing tight end occasionally. you know, that's why you bring Chris Hubbard in, I guess, because you need somebody who can block. But when you do that, you know damn good and well that Chris Hubbard's not going to be a threat in the passing game, you know that kind of stuff. Yeah, they need to start exposing. They need Eli Rogers to have this kind of second half that you envisioned Eli Rogers having, the kind of first half, you know?
Yeah. So in the first half of the first game, that's what I envisioned for the whole season. We haven't seen it since, until the fourth quarter.
Now, obviously, he's missed a few games with that toe injury, and, you know, injuries do happen and that kind of thing. You know, Jesse James is the third leading receiver on this team entering this game against the Cowboys. The third leading receiver behind A.B. and Le'Veon Bell. Would you bet that would have happened prior to the start of the regular season?
Well, I would think that he has 40 catches.
Who?
That's the only way I would have said it. I would have said, you know, Antonio's got, you know, 80 catches, and somebody else, because Bell missed a bunch of games, he won't be second. And, you know, some other receiver stepped up and has – Eli Rogers has 50 catches because he's catching, you know, six balls a game. And then, you know, they're using Jesse a lot, and he's getting 4 to 5 catches a game. So he has 35, you know, catches, and he's got 4 TDs because he's a big red zone threat. And this team's scoring, you know, 30 points
a
game.
Yeah, and here we are. Antonio Brown, 55 catches, leads the team. Le'Veon Bell, who missed how many games? 36 catches already. Jesse James isn't even close to Bell. 24 catches. And Sammy Coates has 20. Eli Rogers, 19. D'Angelo Williams, 15. I mean, you know, they got it. I think Eli Rogers is your X factor this second half of the season for sure. And like it or not, you're going to have to start getting Marcus Wheaton on this field for a few plays and just hope he don't drop any passes when working the middle of the field. And this, I thought this receiving unit would be better than they are at the start of the season, and sadly they're not. And Antonio Brown is paying the price for that. Because you've got a lot of one-trick ponies right now. And even if Martavis Bryant had played in these games, you know, Martavis is pretty much a one-trick pony as well, too. I mean, it's...
Hey, see, Sammy Coates on steroids.
It's a nice trick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nice trick. But, I mean, how many times have we seen him? You know, sure, he had the 80-yard touchdown, last season on a short pitch and catch, and he can definitely gallop like an antelope, even catching the ball short like that. But you know, how many true route runners do you have on this team? You have Antonio Brown,
maybe three.
Antonio Brown and Eli Rogers, and three if you count Wheaton, who, you know, you just worry about him catching the football.
Right, which we didn't worry about until, you know, he dropped five balls in one game. I mean, Sammy Coates became the first Steeler since 1999. I think that Alex found this stat to be targeted five times and not make a catch.
Boy, he's been, you know, after that hot start Coates has had, just been, you know, non-existent after that. You know, Ben didn't get him the ball in one where it looked like he had, who was it, Jimmy Smith down the left side, maybe beat. Make no mistake, the Ravens play the deep ball well and have all season, okay? And the Ravens are a good defense. The Steelers, you know, even though they did do some no-huddle early in the game, wasn't successful on it, they needed sticking with Mike Tomlin's comments post-game about not what did he say? We felt
didn't want to be one-dimensional.
Yeah, we felt that we still had time. Yeah,
that's insane. It's insane.
let me.
I think they have 80 total yards going into the fourth quarter. They got 205 yards on their last three drives. I'm sure the Ravens fans are, you know, and the Ravens players are saying, Jesus, how do we give up a touchdown on fourth and, you know, how do we give up a 23-yard touchdown on fourth and long? How do we give up, you know, a couple other plays that we gave up? How do we do that? Because, Dave, I don't know if it's better or worse that the Steelers had the fourth quarter they had, because it makes me mad as hell. You know, what's that movie line? You know, I'm not going to take it anymore. Yeah, it makes me mad as hell that they didn't figure that out for three quarters. Would it have been better if they just got blanked and you were just like, wow, that was the worst offensive performance in the history of the Steelers? But the fact that – and I don't attribute it all to garbage time, because, you know, look, again, ifs, so take it with a grain of salt, and that's exactly how I mean it. But if Sammy Coates catches that ball, there's 6 minutes left in the game and it's a one-score game, and the Ravens weren't moving the ball at all at that point. So – I mean, it's not – they're in that game, and Mike Tomlin just saying, you know, well, you know, a lot of time. Yeah, there's no urgency to change the game plan and do something different. It's banging your head against the wall and getting the same result. It just made no sense at all. None.
Yeah, urgency, I think, is the key word there. Now, you'll hear fans tweet, you know, heart and this, that, and the other. The heart's there. It's just at times the urgency. I hate losing at anything, and I would think the Steelers, a lot of those Steelers players hate losing as well too. Anytime I'm behind on any type of scoreboard, I want to get back in front as soon as possible. So there is no time. You got to be a little bit more urgent. Now, look, if football games were five quarters, would the Steelers had the fourth quarter that they had, you know, yesterday, like I said, we'll have to see what the All-22 says on it. Yeah, I think a little bit softer there by the Ravens defense, maybe trying not to give up the explosive play. But Roethlisberger on top of it threw a couple of balls that maybe he doesn't normally throw, and maybe he needed to take a few more chances in that game, even though it was almost picked three or four times in that game. And you're right, if Sammy Coates comes down with that catch in the end zone, how much time was left? I forgot to write that down when Sammy Coates didn't get
I can tell you, but off the top of my head, because I was looking at this stuff, it was, you know, about, like I said, about six
right,
minutes.
Right at so. 5 minutes, right? Or no, or I think it,
I'm pulling
I
it
think
up.
It's right at about 5 minutes, either 5 or 4:09.
That was the on downs, right? Turn it over on downs.
Was it?
So the Sammy Coat, the deep middle, it was 4th and 18. Was that the one, the deep middle?
I don't think
the
ISC.
4th and 18 from the 25.
It seemed like they had another play out. It was part of that drive.
3:09 is if this is the right play I'm looking through. Okay, no, sorry, here. 1st and 10 for the Baltimore 27 at 4:09. Incomplete deep middle to Sammy Coates.
Right, right. So, I mean, you get that. You don't even have to run that that onside kick. Hey, we got to save some time to bash this special teams unit now.
Yeah, let's start with Sean Davis because, I mean,
yeah.
What is his assumption there? The guy beats me inside, and so my job is done.
Did you see him get tapped even by who was it? What was it? Golden that tapped him right before that snap.
Golden was the up back, wasn't he? Did he come up and tap him?
Man, I need to look at that again. That's going to be. I've got that written down to focus in on today if Alex doesn't beat me to that. But he was tapped right before that snap. You know, and I don't know what that tap meant, but he did wrong. He did the opposite of what that tap meant.
The tap meant don't get beat for a punt block.
Yeah.
That's what the
by
tap
a
meant.
Small running back. Should have planted that kid on his ass is what should have happened. Okay, you have that.
I want to say this stat so I don't forget it. The Steelers have been outscored in their last three road games, so ever since the season opener, 70-11 in the first three quarters. 70-11.
All right, let's get back to bashing special teams. All right, we already talked about the bonehead, give Tucker 5 yards.
That was the worst penalty of the game because that's on Danny, by the way, right? That's Danny. I mean, it's on the players, but it's on
yeah,
Danny.
Yeah, and it starts from the head coach, though, making sure the special teams coordinator knows how to get right men on the field. But regardless.
Somebody's got to be able to count to 11 or 12.
It seemed like I'm missing another special teams miscue in there as well, too. I mean, this team hasn't been a threat to return either a punt or a kickoff all year. Jordan Berry was the MVP of the game, and he even had a damn 28, 29-yard punt in this game. He's probably got that leg in an ice bucket this morning. But here's the other thing. Man, I understand. I think I wrote about this when they signed Boswell about how cute that onside kick of his was at Rice. It's great, but
it's called a Rabona for those who aren't, you know, technical. It's a soccer move is where it came from. The point is it really going to deceive anybody?
Right, and what's the chances of failure? That's the equivalent, David, of you walking, of your profession being a radio broadcaster and running into a pool hall to show everybody your trick shots. You know, that was a pool trick shot. That stuff should be reserved for practice. I don't care how many times you practice it. And yes, I realize that he did it in the game against for Rice against, I forget, who was it, Houston or Baylor?
It's just, look, you're already at 15% likelihood of getting this done. Hit it on the ground, pop it up, and hope the guys don't field it on the other side. A bounce goes your way.
Give your guys at least a chance of the ball moving 10 yards. And I know that's the intention when he went up to it, was to kick it 10 yards.
But you're right. And listen, as a soccer player and a guy who played a reasonably high level of soccer, I can't do that with a soccer ball, and I've tried it. You know, the fact that he's going to be able to do that under pressure and that it's going to change any of the result of how the game is played is the more important thing. It is not that deceptive, and he's not because of the way you kick it. You can't kick it that hard, and the guys are going to have time to react, and they're known to, you know, their job is to Don't overreact to any kind of fake or anything if the guy comes up and kicks it with his left foot rather than his right foot. So everybody's standing there waiting for it. So all you did is made it hard for the kicker to execute what he's trying to
absolutely.
Do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I gave a bad analogy. My analogy was, David, you being a college soccer player, walking into a pool hall and betting my money on pool trick shots.
And I'm not good at pool.
You know, I mean, that's immediately I couldn't believe when that happened. Now, obviously, we live in a results based society, right? If that Rabona had worked, that's all we're talking about this morning, right?
Sure. But you took your probabilities down significantly by doing
that. How does Danny Smith let that happen? You know, how do you let? I mean, I just don't understand that. These guys have all week to work on getting that ball to hop up, various different onside kicks where you're not crossing one foot, behind the next. You can't come up with something like that in a situation with the game potentially on the line. I just don't understand that. And I don't know. You know, Alex wrote the question this morning, the pros and cons of firing Danny Smith. I don't think that's going to happen, today. But, boy, special teams really has been, outside of Jordan Berry and some kicks by Chris Boswell, have been very disappointing. There have been a few kick blocks and stuff like that. But
so we didn't mention anything else about the defense. We talked a little bit about Artie and Harrison and whatever. Let me just ask you a question. And I didn't mention Cam Hayward's name. Look, the defense played okay. The Ravens ran for 21 yards on their first four carries. And, these are going to be some kneel downs and stuff. But they also, in their last 25 carries, they ran for 29 yards. They weren't able to move the ball on the ground. So, the 95-yard play was a huge play. Mike Mitchell screwed it up, no doubt. He missed that other play there where Steve Smith got 30 extra yards because he didn't make the play. But they got back-to-back pressures that took him out of field goal range after the penalty. So good job. I say one good thing about Tomlin. He took that penalty. That pushed him out of range. They were able to get, they sent blitzers. I didn't mention Cam Hayward's name. Did he do anything impactful?
A couple of tackles. I thought the same thing until I went back through the game a few more times. Was it overly impactful? No, not from a statistical standpoint. No, but I thought he played well enough. I mean, obviously. And, he should only get healthier as time goes on. He played, all but five, six, seven snaps on top of it. Stephon Tuitt did some nice things. In fact, I'm looking at the post-game snaps right now, and Cameron Hayward had two total tackles. I think one of those was for loss. I think he had a quarterback hit in this game as well, too. You'd obviously like to see him have, five, six tackles and two kind of thrown for losses in there. But the Steelers did play, I thought, a lot of base. Daniel McCullers was on the field a little bit in this game as well, too. On top of everything, Shazier, and I think we gave him praise. He played well. I thought James Harrison, played well and rushed on the outside. I thought, for the most part, outside of some missed tackles by Mike Mitchell, I thought for the most part the tackling was okay. And better than what it's been. Sean Davis probably had his best tackle of the year on Mike Wallace on the sideline there. Good form there. No, you can't blame this on a defense, obviously. I mean, but even so, you hate to give up those big explosive plays. But if you want to bowl it.
Great hit by Shazier for that forced fumble. You recover that, obviously.
Yeah, but he knifes right through there. And there were times where this defensive line was on the ground, though. But talking about the runs, the running yards that they gave up, 50 total runs in this game, and 23 yards came on two different plays, and one of them was a 14-yard scramble by Joe Flacco, right? So, they really did a good job at stopping the run, but I thought they would. I mean, this is a Ravens team that hadn't rushed good. Yeah, excuse me for just – I guess what I'm saying, excuse me for not really patting this defense on the back yet. I mean, I want to see what they can do against this Cowboys offense next week that's averaged over 160 yards per game with Ezekiel Elliott, with an offensive line, with a great offensive line, and a decent passing attack in Dak Prescott. They hold those guys to 16 or less points, I'll give them a slow clap.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let me get – if anybody burned their home down because of the loss yesterday – and you need to buy a new home or, upgrade or downsize or invest or rebuild or purchase a vacation home, we've got mortgage rates at all-time lows. And our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native, is a nationally recognized lender. He'll help you out. He'll get you sorted out. He's a terrible podcast listener, and he'll help any other terrible podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763, or email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com. Apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. It's company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois residential mortgage licensee, equal housing lender. Brutal. So we'll see. The Steelers open as a 2.5-point favorite against the Cowboys. I'm sure that's going to shock some people. We'll see. They've been good at home. They better be good at home this week.
Yeah, they better be. I mean, 4-4 right now. Look, you can still make the playoffs if you lose this game to the Cowboys, but they need to get this team back on track. And unfortunately, we're going to be talking more about what happens Sunday on Wednesday, in addition to looking ahead to the game against the Cowboys. We hope to have a beat writer there who covers that team on for that show as well, too. So, we got a lot of work to do, looking at this game, and the Steelers have a lot of work to do preparing for this upcoming game against the Cowboys as well. You can follow all along with all that by following me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to donate out of sympathy for us having to watch these games so many times, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com and finding that donate button in the top right navigational bar. And boy, it's too bad that my 17-16 Steelers overtime win didn't come to fruition.
Right. Impossible.
So many people got on me after that. I obviously meant 19-16 Steelers in overtime, but at this point I would have taken a 17-16 Steelers overtime win.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.